Like notes to the hourglass, these are the songs of our lives.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Songs of Our Lives. I'm Brad Rose. I'm an artist, a composer, a writer, the founder of Foxy Digitalis, and someone who thinks about music and sound far more than is healthy. Each week, I invite on a guest, and we talk about the songs and the music that has meant a lot to them and left its mark. Previous guests include Whitney Johnson, Maurice, Sarah DeVacci, Claire Rousset, Sarah Hennies, David Grubbs, I don't know, lots of people. Everybody's coming on this show because it's a whole hell of a good time. This week, though, we do something different. Never done this before. So excited I got to do it. Have two guests. One band, two guests. So this week, it's Leia. Woo! So whenever I saw that they had this new mini album, which is out now, it's called I Forget Everything. It's on NNA tapes, or NNA. I don't know if they dropped the tapes. Anyway, I thought, okay, this is the perfect opportunity to have multiple guests at once and see how that goes. And surprise, surprise, it was great. It was awesome. And now that I'm remembering this, I guess the Cult Love episode had two people at one time, but that was different. Like, I changed the format to specifically cater towards the fact that we had multiple guests. It was just a little bit different because it was the Christmas episode. So, shout out to them. But this going the full format, two people at once, and we did it. It was great. It was a lot of fun. I mentioned this, like I saw them, they were like, I think the first show I saw coming out of lockdown and stuff, it was Leia, Kite with Robbie Wing and Maurice here in Tulsa. Amazing show. What a way to come out. And it was the first time that I actually got to meet Mari too. So that was cool. And yeah, so Leia is, there's not any other band like Leia in the world. Their music feels so delicate while having this overwhelming gravity to it. And that combination is just sort of takes my breath away. I'm so thrilled. I've gotten to see them a couple of times here in Tulsa, and just, yeah, any opportunity to see them live, go see them, pick up I Forget Everything, 'cause it is out now. Otherwise, just enjoy the show. So my guests, plural today, are a duo. Two people who make some of my favorite music on the planet. And as we were just talking about, I think that your show here is 2021. That's like the first show I saw coming out of lockdown. So, yeah, it's Leia. So I Forget Everything's your new EP. It's out November 22nd, I believe, on NNA. Does that still stand for new age? Wasn't that what it stood for in the beginning? Anyway,
well,
OG. Yeah, I mean, I would imagine it still stands for that. I think just so few people actually know what it stands for, but you are in the know.
Yeah, I'm old. That's
no. Peace Leaves is back. It's back. We're more relevant than ever.
So I guess one of the questions I have, like thinking about, there's a lot of things I could ask about the EP because it's really great, first of all. But thinking about the, like, one of the things it talked about in the, I guess the description of it is the sort of inevitability of loss and like memory and the distortion of memory and all those things, which are things that I find very interesting and think about. And I'm just curious how those themes kind of create, like shaped the process, maybe some of the creative process for this record or.
Well, there's two things sort of, independently, I'm a little fascinated with the idea of time consciousness within music, just kind of as a, as, as a lens for how we think about listening, or kind of the phenomenology of time consciousness, and sort of this idea that you could talk about this in different contexts, but as we listen to music, we're sort of remembering music and context we've had in the past, which kind of shapes our future expectation of what's going to happen. This could be kind of as we encounter, like, come into music, or within a piece of music as we're experiencing something, or, you know, within, you know, moments within that music. But I kind of believe that, you know, we're always engaging in an act of kind of a sort of diminishing horizon in either direction. Mm. That what we are remembering is slowly kind of slipping away from us, and that we kind of maybe think we know less than we know in that way of thinking about things. And then our future horizon, our expectation that is right in front of us, is, you know, very clear. But as we get kind of farther into the future, it's a thing. And it's like, this is sort of like a really half-baked way of talking about, like, Husserl or something like that. And, you know, something I don't even, like, have a total maybe grip on, and, you know, the way that somebody actually knows about that stuff a lot would. But so I've always, I mean, or for a while, maybe for, like, the last 10 years, kind of sometimes thought about, like, music composition and just music in general through this idea of, like, this time consciousness lens. But on a more, like, more specifically, this record, it's like a short record, and we're kind of calling it like a mini album or something. It's kind of, you know, but it was sort of like written in a period of duress, I would say. And it's kind of just like a document of a difficult time. And what happened at the end of that time, at least personally, I would say, is that I kind of like was trying to turn the page on a bunch of stuff. And so it, you know, became about a little bit of an act of forgetting, letting go. And yeah, that's these songs are really dealing with kind of ideas of confusion and loss, and sort of it's just it was a very, like, a very flat kind of doldrums time as well. So there's this, I think, as we started to think about what the music actually was, it really is about letting go of things, kind of forgetting things. And some of that relates to, like, the process of the record itself, and actually, like, is, you know, is literal to the music and us trying to move what we do forward a little bit. But it just, as we, yeah, as we tried to, like, make sense of the work afterwards, you know, because we, like, you know, this all this got named, and of course after the music was made, you know, it just, we were like, oh, this is kind of like, this whole thing is like kind of this elusive thing that we don't necessarily have, like, the greatest handle on. It's like a bit of an experiment. It's a bit of something new for us. And like, on the personal, more contextual side of things, like, it is just like, yeah, it was just like a tough thing that we just kind of, like, squeaked out. It's like 20 minutes of music that exists in that frame. And we tend to make work that's about, like, feeling uncomfortable. In general, it's like a fairly consistent thing in the music. But this one particularly is, like, I don't know. Also, like, very unintentional and just kind of, you know, just,
sure,
like, this happened. But, you know, yeah, it's a very vague answer, but
no, yeah. Well, I mean, I think you kind of, like, there, because to me, there's this real, I guess tension is the right word, between, like, and you were talking about that, this sort of, like, forgetting and, like, moving up, like, there's relief, but there's also, it's hard. It's this, there's these two things, like, kind of pulling against each other. And I think that really, that comes through in the music. What's it like? Have you guys played this stuff live very much? Like, just listen to you talk about that. Playing this live must be,
I guess we'll see soon. Well, no, we've done one of the six okay, live a few times. We've played Corners, and that's the first single from the EP. And it actually is a song that has gone through a few different iterations just between Adam and I. I was actually looking through a lot of, when I write heart parts, I will literally just take a video of myself playing them and then go back and be like, okay, this one's good. It turns into a song. And I think I wrote that heart part in 2022 while we were writing our mixtape Eyeline. And then we were also on the road. 2022 was pretty crazy for us. We were in Europe, I think maybe 7 or 8 times for either touring or just one performance at a time or what have you. So anyway, I wrote that part during that sort of kind of crazy time. And since then, it's been several different songs that we have performed live. And the rest of them also have been several different songs, but have yet to be performed live, right? So November 25th in New York, we will do that.
Yeah, it's a new box a little bit. We like we're gonna start doing we're gonna use these like electronic components live that we have not really done before. We're both sort of like wayward classical musicians in a way. So it's just we're further stepping into something that truly we don't know too much about. But we've gotten to that point where like we're starting to try to make recorded music that can't necessarily be just replicated with two of us playing all of it live. So it's still just heart, violin, and voice. But the idea is to see what we can do in terms of doing some Ableton stuff, and we'll just see how it goes. So yeah, yet to be seen.
Hey, it's after doing all these things for so many, like I've been getting more into like doing a lot more visual art and stuff, and had like my first exhibition, which is terrifying, but thank you. But it's like, it's so exciting. It's exciting and terrifying. Like you're, you know, stepping out into this other world that like, oh, I don't know what the hell I'm doing really. But, and so, yeah, like I really like the different sonic elements on this. What do we call it? Mini album. I keep wanting to call it an EP. It doesn't matter. It's just words.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, it's an EP.
Yeah. But, yeah, so I'm curious. I'm really excited to. I hope we'll get to catch one of these shows at some point where you guys are doing this stuff, because I'm really excited to see how it translates and how you guys, you know, like. And I like the idea of it's like, yeah, making recorded stuff that can't be exactly replicated, and then seeing how it can be replicated in maybe a different new way.
I think it's like really commonplace too. It's just we've always had a fairly old fashioned approach to things. Yeah, so you know, I don't know. It's like see how it goes.
I'm always amazed at when people like talking about mutual friend Maury's friend of the show. She does all these, her recordings are these unbelievable things, and then she somehow manages to replicate so much of her life. But she's like,
Have you seen her Ben with Seth from Orange Milk?
I haven't seen it. I can't even imagine.
I can't pronounce the name. I'm not. Yeah. I don't know how you say. I don't know how you say that. Like /. Whatever, but it's Mario was like triggering that. The band is incredible, and it's like there's like a they have like a whole video presentation going on. It was like this like full, this performance like blew me away, and it's like one of my favorite things I've seen this year, and it's part of this incredible show anyway. But like, she was like playing her violin at one point, but also like triggering these orchestral tracks that sounded crazy. They sounded so good. And I was just like, I love seeing people make things and being almost like being somewhat jealous of how good it is. I hear some movement by her or something like that. It's like, damn, dude, like, you know, fuck. It was just like, Maria is so incredible. And she's also so prolific. And she's like this, a very humble, like true artist. Like she just, I think, like just she's the best.
She's the best. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I could go down this road for a whole long time, but I have no idea how this is going to go with the two of you doing the questions. So we're going to give ourselves plenty of time here.
We need a worst episode that you ever had because our suggestions are ridiculous.
I will say this is like the most wild playlist, I think, This is about the 65th episode I've recorded, and nothing comes close. And that excites the hell out of me.
You mean in terms of it's the worst playlist.
No. No, it's like it's a party, man. Okay, well, we're gonna, as ever, to start, first question is, what is the first song that you remember?
This question is crazy, by the way. It's like, really, I started asking it to my friends like a couple nights ago. So I was like, who knows that? And it's like really hard, it's really hard to figure out, because you can like, I don't remember what was happening when I was 2 or 3 years old, other than like snippet memory, but I could like, you know, I know what my, I know I could like ask my parents and they'd tell me what, you know, what music I gravitated towards. And when I was trying to figure out the answer to this question, I actually like hit them up and asked them, and I didn't really like their answers and I couldn't remember any of it. So yeah, I can remember Yanni live at the Acropolis like really well. Like I can sort of like sing the entire album, like, or kind of like, you know, yeah, sing along to the whole thing. And then Obla Di Obla Da is probably like the first song I had any sort of any connection to as a child. And I don't know if the love for that song has so much lasted, although I do think the White Album is amazing. Like I think it's my favorite Beatles album, but I'm like not a big Beatles fan, I would say.
So. Yeah. Yeah, I feel like Obla, it's like the Beatles ska or something. It's
I don't know what they were, yeah, like it's like what they were particularly like, yeah, the particular like itch that was scratching. I mean, just in the you know, yarn of all these kitschy things that they made. But you know, I mean, I don't know, actually, that sounds great. I think the verses are really good. It's a, you know, it's storytelling in a way that we don't, you know, that's kind of dead, I feel like, a lot. Or It's not too often people just, yeah, like tell a nice story of a character with characters with a name, you know, and a nice allegorical tale. Like, isn't that true?
We talk so
metaphorically these days, but we don't like really. I don't know, you know. Yeah, maybe that song is kind of deep now that I'm thinking about it. Desmond and Molly Jones. I don't know.
Well, then Yanni live at the Acropolis, it's like one of the most epic performances in history or something.
It rips. It's so good.
I know. I'm a sucker for like music. Like it's like just huge. And yeah, that's like the first thing. And it's also kind of whimsical, but especially with the backdrop.
I mean, it's ridiculous, but it's like, it's virtuosic. There's also this, there's this violinist Karen Briggs, who's like the violin soloist on it, and you know, she's like, I guess, a preeminent like pseudo jazz violinist, and as like a, you know, an 11-year-old or something, you know, I definitely revered these like solos that she takes over Live at the Acropolis, like a lot of like a lot of like just like you know, gliding up and down the neck, trying to do these like sort of showy like trick things that are so, they're actually like so silly, but she's definitely like a this is so marginal and no one cares about this, and I sort of hate jazz violin, but she's part of this like I think she's part of this like rarefied group of people, like Regina Carter-esque, that are these very good classical violinists who have opted towards playing jazz instead, or like improvised music, but not in like a new music sort of setting. So she's cool, and it sort of like harks back to this time where like Jean-Luc Ponty, for instance, like won the conservatory prize at whatever when he was 18. He's like such a badass violinist, you know, to, you know, make like kind of insane music for the rest of his life. There's some bangers, but then also like so much of it is just like, you know, it's a fraught genre. But Karen Briggs is kind of a legend. She's like, you know, in the mix on Live at the Acropolis. So I didn't even think about that, but I think that's actually like kind of very important to me personally.
Yeah.
Do you remember any songs from when you were really young, Mary?
I have no idea what Live at the Acropolis is. I don't know.
You would hate it.
I grew up, my parents are young, and I grew up like, they're huge music fans, and I would grow up literally like backstage sleeping in someone's green room, like, or like at the bar somewhere, like I was the only child always. So yeah, there was no, I feel like this is chat, that is that children's music?
Your parents are like honky tonk and like, you know, just kind of party. Like they just, yeah, they just like go out.
Country music and
they just go see music every night still. It's like, it's
still beautiful, yeah.
Beautiful Texas stuff. But
yeah, some deep Texas country roots sort of shit. But so, you know, I don't remember specific songs because I was probably like asleep backstage somewhere or whatever. I mean, the first real memory I have, I remember being a kid. I always had a record player, and I would my favorite record to steal from my parents was Lou Reed, and I would listen
to
Lou Reed just like on repeat as a kid.
Amazing.
With my brother. My brother and I would just like sit there and just like listen to it. And yeah. That's what I remember as a kid. Specifically, but before that it was all very unspecified, sort of just like not even understanding what we're listening to, kind of just
right
there.
Man, Lou Reed, that's a hell of a...
It's very dark.
Yeah. Well, hey, what are you going to do? Well, speaking of dark, maybe, kind of, what's a song that makes you cry?
Well, what did we were talking
through all these. Oh, yeah, these are like our separate answers. Oh, yeah, I put All Is Full of Love.
But we actually... Adam was too embarrassed to talk about one that we
oh yeah, we could talk about that.
The Billie Eilish Barbie song.
Oh man.
Yeah.
We both cried during the Barbie movie.
But it was because of that song.
That's what we did too. So I'm the
Eilish, what is it? What Was I Made For?
What Was I Made For? Oh dude, it's
really and you know what? I have to say this quietly because my neighbor also he's home all the time and he listens to it on repeat like 20 times in a row.
Oh god, that's...
And he sings to it, and I'm like saying this quietly because he's probably listening to us, but he sings to it and he'll also sing the cat version of it, like he'll meow sing to it. Oh my god. Anyway, that has collectively made Adam and I cry recently.
Yeah, that song like did kind of get me the first time I heard it.
I love
that. Yeah.
I'm embarrassed.
I'm not embarrassed.
Don't be embarrassed. Whenever I watch that movie, so I have a 11-year-old daughter watching that with her, and that's, oh my god, I was,
oh my god,
it was like a mess.
We did sit in the Barbie movie next to like, yeah, sort of like girls around that age who are having like a very emotional experience with the movie and had seen it,
for
the fifth time, you know, there was like, which is kind of sick. I All Is Full of Love in my life is probably like the one that I have like, just stared into, specifically like the, I don't even know which, the chiller one, the one that is like, it's just a, I don't know, it's a very hopeful, beautiful song, and I feel like in some cool way too, like captures this like, the story of Bjork is one of like earnestness and kind of like just belief in something, and it's you know, more and more in a world where like being a very weird artist seems like not the most like practical route to take. I think like, you know, she exists as one of these beacons of someone who has kind of like actually changed the world and not changed herself in order to do that. But that song is a very like, I've definitely just stared into the void and sobbed listening to that song. I'm like a mega stoner and will listen to songs over and over and over. So I'm sure I've listened to that song like 20 times on repeat before in like kind of a, yeah, exactly. Like the same shit. Like he is like a total like luxuriating in, you know, the feeling. The release of sadness.
Yeah, god, all Is Full of Love would be a hell of a song to do that to. My god. Whew. Like, yeah, that's I think that song, it gets me emotional in a different, like, because yeah, it's so fucking like beautiful and it's like this captures the sort of like overwhelmingness of, I don't know, love and everything. Oh, it's so good. And yeah, Billie Eilish. So I talked about this with somebody, like, man, like TikTok fucking gets me, like making me cry. People on their fucking TikTok videos with that goddamn song.
Well, yeah, they're describing like the worst day of their lives. When my son died, and then yeah. I have like, and you're like, wait, what the fuck? Yeah, like horrible shit.
Yeah,
I mean that's why I don't have TikTok because I can't do that. I know I would get sucked in all day and be crying.
Yeah,
to Billie Eilish, someone's, you know, best or whatever the fuck.
Yeah, yeah, don't do it. Stay away. Okay, well, what's a song that puts you in a better mood?
Oh, that was Adam. Yeah, okay. Wait, you said Big Mo Bar Baby.
That's like I feel like that's something we have just like, I don't know, it's a song we listen to a lot. We put it on. It's like such a,
oh, we'll pump us up for sure.
That's a feel good song.
Yeah.
You know, it's in the category with like, you know, insert like 30 Lil Wayne songs here or something like that. But I don't know. But Bar Baby is like such a special song. You know, I feel like, you know, yeah, good song.
Gets you. Yeah, I guess it gets Adam in a better mood. When we were like thinking through how to answer these questions, yeah, we weren't sure if we should do collective answers as a band or individual. I think as a band, that would be like a good like. I don't know. I'm from Houston, so right. Like sort of like screwed up clique, like yeah, like any of that sort of era of music is like what I grew up with. Right. You know what I mean? So we've also as a band spent a lot of time in Houston, and I feel like it makes sense for us to feel connected to that world.
Yeah. This song puts me in a better mood. Like, it's, I don't know, between like the bass line and the fake children's choir and stuff. Yeah,
but children's choir is so good. I loved that in like hip hop music when they would like use weird like children singing or laughing or something. Like, it's very bizarre.
I know. And yeah, RIP Big Mo.
Literally, yes.
Yeah, I find that song to be cool because like I definitely didn't know about that growing up, but I feel like you can grab like most people. I don't know, it's just like a beautiful like regional hit where like if anyone from that area just knows the tune, you know. I don't know, you know,
Southside living legend.
All right, well, here's everybody's favorite question. What's the objectively greatest song of all time?
The worst question.
We put Goldberg Variations, which is probably not even like my favorite Bach, but I liked the.
It's my favorite.
I like the spin. I would say like.
I think Bach is the greatest.
I mean, violin partitas. Well, Bach is like the.
The greatest of all time. He is the GOAT. But but I don't know any of his like songs because I'm not
sure.
I know he has like songs he wrote, like vocal type. Stuff, but I just Goldberg Variations, I would say.
I mean, he's like the all Western music harmony, like, you know, stems from him essentially. Like, in I mean, I liked the spin you put on it where you in the prompts you sent us, you asked if like we were showing an alien the height of sonic achievement, you know. So I like, okay, I would also throw Messiaen's Tarangulila Tarangulila in the mix as well, because I think it's like.
That's what we would show the alien.
Well, no, I think Bach is like the correct answer because it's just like, it's perfect music. And it sort of like informs our, okay, I was talking a little bit about like time consciousness and. So like, uh-huh. I feel like when we're bowled over by something, like anytime you hear something that you're like, oh my God, this overwhelms you. And this could be in any sort of, visceral reaction to music, whether it's like feeling, you know, the catharsis of like expressing something that you need to express that kind of could be more towards the spectrum of difficult emotions, or whether it just pumps you up and makes you feel really good. I think it's about being surprised or kind of having some expectation, subverted to an extent. And so our perception of like functional music, like harmony, like what comes next, what anything is leading to, is all like traces back to people studying Bach, you know, at least in our place in time of living.
Right. Yeah. For, right. You know, currently. Yes.
I'm really interested in 14th century French Ars Nova music, for instance. This composer, Guillaume de Machaut, specifically, is like the sort of the legend of
hundreds of years pre-Bach.
Yeah, the legend of the 1300s. And his music is sort of like, has all these. Okay, so he wrote the first mass in the ordinary setting for more than one voice, like the first complete version of this, the first person to author a mass for more than one voice. And it's like, he's not early on in polyphony or like more than one voice happening at the same time, but he was very, very obsessed with, the preservation of his work and had the means to do so. And so he had, you know, manuscripts made throughout his life. So we have hundreds of his works that have survived. So we studied a lot. And obviously it exists in an era of music where we don't know the range. There's like anomalies about it. So it gets interpreted through this kind of modern lens. So there's certain just unknowns there. I am not an early music scholar or anything like that. You know? But you listen to his music and there's all this crazy shit happening in it that's like beautiful and sounds a little futuristic and alien and stuff. And it's sort of, because it predates like, you know, these systems that we have for Western harmony that come from like counterpoint and Bach and all that, it just like is gets very it gets like weird to talk about. But once you get to Bach, it's just like, okay, cool, like that's a, you know, that's we're modulating into this, and this is, you know, it's like, plus his whole like, in terms of tuning, Bach's, you know, influence on the concept of tuning and all that,
right?
A very favorite subject of all of ours. Like, and so you can't really like, when the aliens come, you can't exactly like compete with Bach. I mean, I think
Gucci, yeah, you have to show them Bach.
Well, Gucci Mane, like Gas and Mud is like, you know, also a perfect song. But like, if I had like, aliens, the Haydn song, I don't know. Maybe show them that instead. Like, I feel like Chief Keef's Sitko is like one of the most beautiful things that's ever been made. You know, like, so it's like. It, I guess, you know, it's all short form. Bach is just like, you also picked like the version of the Goldberg Variations that is like the, not the, we definitely disagree on which Glenn Gould version is better too.
55 or what is it? 81.
Yeah. The end of life one is incredible. I feel like, or that him, you know, the,
yeah. Yeah. I guess he had like 25 more years to think about it or something. I don't know. Yeah, the youth.
Well, yeah, the obviously the earlier one's a little more pristine.
I want to show Aliens, Bach, and Chief and Gucci Mane. Like, I think that's that's like the bet. Like, it's like kind of this ideal combination.
Totally. And I'm sure there's something that, like, what would there be like a Gucci Mane? Did he sample Bach?
Well, maybe? Yeah.
Well,
yeah. Probably. God, there's
on this. If you pick, there's the Gucci Mane Chief Keef album, and there's the song on it called "Top in the Trash" that goes like bong 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 bong, and that's very similar to a part that's in Messiaen's Tarangle Lila. And you could just play them both at the same time. And I think like, this is the secret about Tarangle Lila that I need to for the secret sauce on Tarangle Lila is from a DJ perspective. You can put it over any piece of music, and it'll sound cool because it's just like. So off the wall. It's the greatest. It's like the greatest use of an orchestra ever. It's crazy. Plus, it has the Ansmartino. It's like just has fucking. Just gonna throw that in there. Like maybe make a DJ for the or something. You know.
Oh yeah, I want to hear that mashup though. Now, like you've got me, man. All sorts of good ideas coming out of this. Okay. Well, what is a song that you used to love, but now not so much?
We have like two answers about this. There are some, I suppose, but I also kind of believe that I'm not sure I've ever actually fallen out of love with any song that I once loved.
I don't think I have either. I feel like once I really love a song, Like, even if I get tired of it, I think if I came back to it in a year, like, that initial feeling of love is still there, at least for me.
I loved, like, Dave Matthews Band and the Red Hot Chili Peppers when I was, like, between certain ages. So I, like, there are certain things about that that I, like, okay, so I think the Red Hot Chili Peppers artistically are actually kind of, like, have had some great moments, but I think that, like, I think Anthony Kiedis, I think a couple of them have proven to be pretty fraught as people, and I just can't, like, you know, I don't want to support them. There's many, many people under that category whose music I used to love and kind of, like, or, you know, who have become, like,
yeah. R. Kelly comes up often on this
but it's really? Like, but I don't know if it actually, like, changes my opinion of the music at all.
I mean, it sucks because, like, if we were to put music under a lens like that, like, you know, most of our heroes are low-key fucked up.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's, yeah, it's...
R. Kelly is high-key fucked up, so it's, like, a little bit different.
Yeah, it's hard to know. It's hard to think of people where it's like, oh my god, their music and everything, like, it, or art or whatever, means so much, and they're an amazing person too.
It's totally true. You, like, you probably should separate these things, and then if you go back, like, in history, I mean, I think a lot of the, like, the great artists probably did some.
I mean, I wonder what sort of fucked up things walked it.
I've always,
where is that, like,
I've always imagined that, like, Gauguin was a really bad person, that he, like, was doing, like, terrible things throughout his lifetime just based on kind of, like, the setting for his, or I don't know, but, you know, I just, like, it's, I think yeah, like, anyone who amassed a ton of power within their lifetime is, like, you know,
yeah,
the potential for a lot of pitfalls. Paganini was definitely, like, you know, I mean, he was
doing all sorts of shit.
Yeah. Oh my god, like, you know. So, yeah, like, within our own lifetime, it's like,
right.
You know, I mean, I could insert Ariel Pink songs here and stuff like that. Like, there's like all sorts of weird shit. I don't know if truly, though, I did love the Dave Matthews Band as, like, a 14-year-old. And I don't think that music probably stirs as much in me. Dave Matthews is the shit. He's awesome. Although the violinist of the Dave Matthews Band was, like, defamed for doing awful things. So, or, like, not like, yeah, he was, I think, whatever, we don't need to get into it, but yeah, there's, you know, they've had their brushes with stuff. Boyd Tinsley got canceled for, yeah, I don't know.
Wow. Okay, well, kind of along these lines, what's a song that people hate? Whoever these people are, I don't know, somebody, they hate it, you don't care, you love it no matter what.
Let's see. Oh, Adam answered that on our little spreadsheet. I don't know this song.
I mean, there's so many.
Song that most people hate, but you love it. Oh god, I love a lot of bad music. But if it's actually that bad, like, why do so many people
know it? Right.
Yeah. What was your answer?
My, like, karaoke song is Robbie Williams' Angels, and I think it's a great song. And I'm not sure. I'm not sure everyone would agree. It's great. I don't know.
I feel like if you heard it, you'd probably recognize it.
It's like his, like, he had Millennium was that, like,
that his, was his hit. Big one. Yeah.
Robbie Williams was so enormous at one point. He's like an international superstar. He, like, lives in he's like one of those castle dwellers.
Like Enya?
Yeah. He had, like, such, but that song stirred a lot in me as a youth. I love, like, any power ballad too. Like, I know.
I'm a sucker for a power ballad.
What are songs that people hate? Like, I don't, I feel like.
Well, I, you know, it's like, that Aerosmith song, like, Don't Want to Miss a Thing or whatever. I love that song.
It's like, you know, kind of. But, like, I mean, it's, it. Yeah, what it, like, I don't even.
What the heart of this question is, like, what do you feel maybe is there maybe some element of like feeling self-conscious about, you know, I like said, I was embarrassed to, you know, admit that the Billie Eilish song kind of stirred up something in me. You know, like,
but I don't think anything is embarrassing anymore. Like, I think internet culture is kind of just like, is anything embarrassing? Is anything actually bad? Like, if we all know something, like, is it actually that bad? Like, why do we know it? Like, why is it being pushed into like the forefront of culture? Like, I don't know. Like, what, like, I don't even know. I can't even think of an example of a song that, quote, everyone hates.
Right. Yeah. Well, so
I know that's getting really existential and sort of just like, ugh.
Absolutely.
It's a lot, but I can't even think of something.
So, like, whenever because early on, I recorded an episode of this where a friend of mine made me answer the questions, and I framed this, and I can't remember what the like prompt is for this, but so there's a song that my daughter hates so much, and if I try to play it, like, she will go turn the stereo off, and it makes me sad. It's Rasputin by Boney M, which fucking rips.
Damn.
It's like, oh man, it's like a 70s German disco song about, like, the chorus is rah rah, right, Rasputin.
No, it's like it's a legendary. You'll hear it in like a lot of, I hear that song in bars like all the time, to be honest. I feel like that's like, it's like punk party song.
Yeah.
Like, anytime I'm at like a hardcore bar, like, I feel like it plays to me.
and it's a song about like Rasputin being this like sexy lover.
Yeah.
Which is, it's absurd. And, you know, maybe she's right. Maybe, you know, she shouldn't, I don't know. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've long got past, I think I'm past the point of where, yeah, like, I feel weird or embarrassed about shit I like. I don't know. Well,
we all have like, people do have aversions to songs too. And that makes me think of like, when I graduated from music school, or I guess I didn't actually, I'm technically a college dropout, but I did do a senior recital. We don't need to get too deep into that. But we did like a performance of like a piece that I wrote, and it was like some half an hour piece that was just like, you know, 8 bars of music kind of like slowly changing a little bit, but like definitely minimalism. And my mom used to always hate when like Philip Glass or anything was playing in the household growing up, and she told me afterwards that listening to the piece made her feel like she was like trapped in jail or something. You know, so like to her, like listening to minimalist music is like being held captive or something in a bad way. And I,
well, that's weird. Your mom doesn't like Philip Glass. My mom loves Philip Glass.
Well, yeah, like, well, yeah.
And took me to see Philip Glass as a kid.
No, Philip Glass is like a good, it's a good example too, because yeah, that's like about as pleasing and like you know, sort of like filmy or something as it gets,
right?
It's so satisfying. Like, I mean, Glassworks is just kind of like bangers and stuff. Like, it's just, you know, it's like, it's not even particularly long form, you know.
Right.
So like it's cool how we like, it's really cool how we all don't like the same things. I know it's like a really dumb thing to say, but it's kind of like it's really interesting and confusing, you know. It's like there, it makes the path forward with creating stuff is like very community oriented, but also extremely extremely doesn't, like, probably shouldn't live in any sort of space of worrying how other people are going to feel about things, you know.
Yeah.
Who the fuck knows?
Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe somebody knows this. What's the most romantic song?
Beyonce, Drunk in Love.
Yeah.
What is romance? Mary Lou, what is romance?
I don't know.
Do you think of yourselves as romantics?
Definitely.
I'm a realist.
Really?
Yeah.
Mary Lou is a realist. I think like romance is impractical, or whatever. So I like, yeah, I don't know.
Drunk in,
like,
Love. That's a great song.
Yeah. One time I was in a cab and I was kind of drunk, and I heard the song Drunk in Love, and I was like, this is like, it's like the best song I've ever heard.
It is.
It is a
really wonderful romantic song. I remember when it first came out. It was like her surprise album. I remember. Mm-hmm. I was like, "What? This is life changing."
It feels so good. Like it feels so good.
You know. And Jade, her husband, isn't it? Like, how romantic,
right?
And practical.
Can true love be requited, though?
I don't know. I mean,
I've never known the answer to that question. Actually, I don't think personally I know the answer to that question. But that's just my own limited worldview. But like, I feel like, yeah, romance is being drunk in love a little bit.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, man. Now we're really getting into the existential questions. Yeah. All right. What's a song that changed your perspective on an artist, either for better or for worse?
This is a funny one that we kind of answered collectively. We recently drove to Philadelphia to play a show. And we decided to drive back after the show, which is like a 2-hour drive from Philadelphia to New York City. Mm-hmm. And so we were like trying to like stay awake and hype ourselves up. Of course, we played Bar Baby. Of course, we played like all of the songs we're talking about in this podcast episode.
We played them all.
We played them all. And we put on the Charlie XCX record. We both hadn't heard Everything is Romantic before. And when we played it that night, we were both like, holy shit. This is fucking incredible. And I think for both of us, it like, of course, it's like, you can't be involved in any sort of like popular music, even though we are experimental music artists. We are like in, you know, in the world of somewhat, I don't know, cultural references, whatever.
Right. Sure. Yeah.
It's like you have to be aware of Charlie XCX. We were both aware, like, you know, it's like, she's around. I don't know, that song changed my perspective on her. It like, if she leveled up.
Mm.
For me, I'm in my head, in my purview of her as an artist, she's really like, she did it for me. That song did it for me.
I fucking love Charlie XCX. So I'm like, for me, it was her Pop 2 album. When I first heard that, whenever it came out, that was like 10 years ago now or something.
Mm-hmm.
It just, I was aware of her and stuff, and then heard that, was just like, oh my God, like this is the pop music that I want to listen to. Mm-hmm. Like, this is what I've been looking for. And yeah, like it feels like she's like leveled up again too, like with Brat.
Yeah, well, yeah, I didn't feel that way until I heard
this.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Well, it's interesting you say that. You talk about like positioning and like it. I'm a big believer in like the idea of experimental music is kind of dead or something, or that it's like it's certainly like a bit of a barrier to looking at things, or kind of keeps us separated. Like a good way to get people to like not take any interest in what you're doing is be like, hey, come check out this new experimental thing I just made. Like it's you know,
no one's gonna be there. It's,
you know, it's wonderfully specific, you know. But then like as we look at like you know, popular music throughout our like really current time, it's just like rife with all this stuff that is however you want to look at it, like form has totally like, we're thrown out the window. Like, you know, you don't have to repeat anything in a song for it to make sense in a very, very pop context. You know, or like tonal stuff, like anything that's like out or like, you know, kind of like, you know, very, very like any way you want to slice this stuff. There's just many, many examples of popular music that's pulling, either sampling or like made by people who luxuriate or know a lot about this world. Like it's so, you know, even like us in our weird existence of just kind of like, you know, making our music and making tracks with other people, like, you know, Charlie XCX is just via like a few people not very far away or something, but I will fully admit to like not just like sometimes not tuning into like the thing that we're all talking about at a moment. So this year, like my reaction to something like Brat would just be like, oh, okay, like cool. You know, like I definitely don't have anything to add to this. And that's, I'm probably robbing myself of the experience of hearing something really cool. Cause we were like, yeah, we listened in the car the other day. And I was just like, okay. Yeah. Like it's just like,
so sick.
It's just really fucking,
it's so good.
It's like really impressive. It's like crazy. And I get why like, you know, Caroline feels connected. It's not all like weird, just weird shit. You know, it's just like, it's and truly, yeah, it is kind of like, you know, pop music made for maybe for this idea of like, to like for people who do want to like synthesize these like experimental things in their lives or something. It's like, it's aiming to, you know, it's hitting that like, we can talk about this and think about it type thing. Yeah, it's cool when we have these moments of something exploding to the point where like just everyone starts talking about it. And the only people I've really talked about Charlie XCX with are people who I kind of just assume wouldn't even be interested in, you know, as of this year, which is cool, you know? I really like the whole thing about her wrestling with the idea of wanting to have a child and all that. That's like, it's crazy. It's so cool. And it's like, it's a very intense album on that one.
Yeah.
But also admit to like, I just don't know much about it. And I think we were just both like, okay, yeah, like everyone's right.
Well, that there is a pop culture phenomenon happening that's actually like high quality musical work. Like that's really fucking cool.
Yeah, totally agree. Yeah. She's sort of become like my gate. Like, so my daughter is really into like, she's 11. She's into like Taylor Swift and Sabrina Carpenter and all that stuff. But like Charlie is XCX is my, it's like, okay, but check this out. It's like the gateway, like into, you know, there's, she can relate to it in like the sort of pop context, but yeah, there's so many other things going on that it's, I fucking love her. So
really incredible.
I would to loving most popular music I hear. Oh, I'm actually like, it's pretty seldom that I hear something I'm just like, ugh. Like I couldn't possibly like, I mean, it's just like pretty, it's weird to like disparage any of the artists on this level across the board. Cause even like, if you want to like say, oh, I don't really like what this is all about or what they've kind of like the thing that they've cultivated here, the image or the whole thing, it's like it's being made by like a million like brilliant people, and so there's at least like even with everyone there's gonna be these moments of these things where you're like, damn, like what a crazy achievement y'all
right
together. You know, I feel like I heard just that Brat song, I was like, Everything Is Romantic, I just heard it and I was just like, oh my god, like this was so hard to make. this is incredibly impressive. You know,
I mean, going back to what we were talking about earlier, like with you, I don't even know how to, I wouldn't even know how to make this, like listening to it, it's like, I don't understand how this is all working. And I love that. Like, I like to be confused.
100%. I think it's like pretty experimental. I mean, you know, if we want to go back to that, it's like, there are, shit is changing. You know, hyperpop, all this stuff, like, is all really in these zones where, like, we're pulling into a new era of listening. Always, I guess, but like, it's you know, yeah, it's cool.
Well, so first of all, like, our lyrics. Do you pay a lot of attention to lyrics? Like, are lyrics an important thing?
I don't. But he's the singer and I'm not, so I think that it kind of makes sense that I'm not as attuned.
I don't know. I mean, lyrics are not a big component in our own music. It's really not a very forward facing part of it. And I like personally like always compose via like kind of just singing vowels, and we're like kind of in the style of like how Joni Mitchell wrote or what Coco King's songs are, or Melvin's. They're like didn't even really speak words to the songs. Now we sort of like, you know, try to chisel them out, but they get assigned to music kind of after the fact. It's like arbitrary in my own practice, but I connect with certain artists on, you know, it's meaningful for some people and it's not for others. You know, it's really it's you know, it's an important consideration when it comes to like some people, you know, like I mean, I put Leonard Cohen and
yeah
Stranger Song, which I feel like, I mean, you know, I mean, just put that among the annals of many, many things where I'm just like, it's just holy shit level work. You know, it's just like genius poetry. Taking it back a little bit to this guy I was mentioning from the 1300s, Guillaume de Machaut, right?
Back to the 1300s.
Okay, so Guillaume de Machaut, like, predates music in the context that we kind of look at it now. Like, it's not like people weren't going to concerts and just appreciating it, you know, certainly. It was, you know, in very specific kind of forms in life. And he was thought more of as a poet within his lifetime. And the music was sort of a vehicle for the poetry, in a way of putting it. So, like, the idea of the poet in music diminishes, I think, over time, like just continues to. So, you know, at this point, it's ascribed to very particular things. But in Leonard Cohen's time, you know, it's like, it's just, he's, you know, this great writer who also made great music, you know. So, it's like the songs are so dense in their, you know, in their words that, like, you can just sit there and break them apart forever, you know. It's true that all the men we knew were dealers who knew they were through dealing every time they gave them shelter like that. I mean, it's just like, I could sit there and just think about that forever. And, like, you know, I know that kind of man. It's hard to hold the hand of anyone who's reaching for the sky just to surrender. That's just like righteous shit. So it's so, it's just like, it's so easy to identify with and it's so complicated. And I love music where you're like immediately like, you're like, oh damn, I know exactly, like, that is touching to what I'm feeling right now, but I could sit in here and figure out forever how exactly you're putting it, because there's so much of it, there's so much embedded in it. Like, you know, Frank Ocean is like this, you know. You know,
I really connected to the lyrics in Julie Byrne's latest record.
Yeah, Julie's he's a crazy lyric writer. It's all like, I drank the air just to be near you. It's like, it's
insane. Yeah, it gives me chills.
I used to think he was saying, like, I drank beer just to be near you. Like, the line is so good. I didn't even, like, I couldn't until I read it. I couldn't appreciate, like, how deep it was. It's just like, and she is, like, you know, a little, she, like, comes from a different time a little bit. Julie's, like, not quite forcing herself to live in, like, 2024, be in every place. Like, she's centering more on herself, and it, like, comes from this tradition, you know, like poetry. And that's also why Charlie's XCX is cool, is we're like, you know, it's like there's a poetic side of it that's put very, like, prominently. Poetry's the shit. We, like, you know, we don't always doesn't seem as, like, I think it's sexier now than it was, like, 10 years ago in, like, our, you know, hope culture or whatever. Like, performance art is kind of, like, ruling the, you know.
No, Tumblr was always, like, a thing. Like sad people writing their things, like, on or just, like, Twitter. Like, that's a form of poetry. People, like, that's the modern. I mean, I know it's not, like.
No, you're right. I don't know. Poetry has never been undersung. I'm, like, I'm reaching.
Everyone wants to, like, say their bit.
We know. We have these homies, like, a bunch of them who have poetry tattooed on, which says poetry.
Yeah.
Yep.
What's the last song you completely fell in love with?
Idea June.
Oh yeah, we Chanel love Beads. This Chanel Beads song, Idea June.
I love the whole Chanel Beads record.
Their new record is so fucking good. It's so good.
It's great music.
But yeah, we both fell in love with that song, like, kind of independently. Like, and we're like, oh wait, you're, like, super into this too.
I think like most songs on their record are kind of like, just they're incredible. Talk about, like. Yeah, it's beautiful stuff. It's like it's so earnest and, like, makes me feel like teenager levels of just kind of amorousness and longing and weird kind of, like, you know, stare off into the distance type feelings. And the words and all that are, like, really, like, kind of like universal, easy to connect to, but weird and very hard to parse. And, like, it's a very, like, feels like kind of a literary oriented project. And
yeah,
we just love Chanel Beads. Yeah. I don't know. We joined the club of many people who are loving Chanel.
I mean, it's super good. So yeah. What's the sexiest song?
Oh, what did we write down? What did we come up with? Oh, this is Adam's choice, but it is sexy. Yeah. We love the Earth Eater song, Spill the Milk. What is that produced by
Tony Seltzer?
Yeah, Tony Seltzer did that. So good.
Yeah,
it's sick. I mean, Alex is like a sexiness is power. Alex is the homie. And, like, you know,
it's a very sexy song.
Yeah, we it's just, you know, I love the ascendance of, you know, how she kind of deals with this stuff. It's just super, like, it feels huge and kind of levitating. Mm-hmm. But
it's also like
it's a dirty, nasty song. It's
yeah. Awesome. But she's like kind of tiptoeing around how nasty it is. Yeah. In like very sexy way.
Yeah, I just love that song. Sick song. One of my favorite Alex jams.
Hell of a song. Yeah. All right, two questions left. What is the song that means the most to you? Not necessarily because of the song. You associate it with something or someone, some experience.
I answered this one, and it is that it's from Joanna Newsom's first record, the song "Un Gallop." It brings me back to high school. I get chills just thinking about it. I remember a friend of mine giving me that tape. That he copied it onto a tape. So I guess it would be technically a mixtape. Whatever. Yeah, copied it for me. And I was like, what is this? And I listened to it in my car. And at first I hated it. And then I had a boyfriend in high school give me another mixtape with that song specifically on it. And the whole record, of course, gets me. She's a huge inspiration, and I adore her. But yeah, that song in particular, I think just
I'm pretty sure that Joanna Newsom has come up on this show more than anybody else.
Wow,
she's an amazing musician, and I wish the harp thing didn't like overpower her whole persona.
I know,
like, for people, I think just because the harp is such a rarity, mm-hmm. but like, as a musician, like, she is an incredible lyricist, writer, composer. Like, she's incredible. Yeah. And happens to be an incredible harp player, too.
Yeah. I'm hopefully, I don't know that anything's going to save us in 2025, but a new Joanna Newsom album would at least soften the blow a tiny bit.
Well,
that would be sick. That would be a dream.
She's been playing like shows and playing like all new stuff. So it's gotta be close.
I think so. I mean, and she had a kid a couple years ago. It's probably about time that, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's time. The kid's probably old enough to where she can go in the other room and write some songs.
Yeah. Get the kid to sing on the album. I don't know. Bring back some children's choir. Yeah. Like, oh my gosh. There we go. Okay.
I'll just interject something on that question too. But for me, there's this I like to bring up this record a little bit. There's the Amen Dunes 2013 record Love. There's a lot of songs on that. Okay, it's like, to me, this is like maybe the greatest breakup record of the last like 10, 15 years or something. It's incredible. And I remember in 2013, maybe it came out in 2013, maybe 2012, I don't remember, but I remember turning to it amidst a bad breakup, and the album is like drilled into my soul. The song Love from that song, Everybody's Crazy, and like, pretty incredible artist, and like, in that record, I think like Balance at like the height of his powers, kind of like, not record made in a lot of studios and with a lot of time put into it, but still very much dwelling in this kind of like teeming crazy tape world that he comes from, that harks back to his earlier records that are just also textural and incredible. I love so much of his work so much, but that record has like just it's like a serious record. I don't really listen to it much anymore because I do just associate it with this
right
like it's a lot, you know. Yeah.
All right, what is, at least in this moment, what is your favorite song? It's like a party in a box, come on.
Collectively we chose the Daddy Yankee hit Gasolina. I don't know if you're familiar.
Yeah. It's like, seriously, like, if you're sitting around, you're bored, and you want to have a part, like just blast this song out your windows and like a party's going to show up.
Literally clean the house.
Yeah.
Make your dinner, whatever, like drive your car, anything, ride your bike, whatever. Yeah. It makes me feel.
I have like a playlist that's just like hype songs that I listen to, and this is the first song on it.
Yes, it's everyone's hype song. How can it not be your hype song?
It is like a top hype song.
So it's hard good. Not to,
yeah.
And that's like what we need. It's like your favorite song right now in fucking Trump 0.2 or whatever. Like you have to have a hype song. We have to get back out there and be happy. We can't have a favorite song that's sad right now.
No, God, no.
It's not already. I guess that's kind of fucked for our music, but.
That Lil Yachty song, Strike Holster, is like that might be my current favorite song. I listen to that song all the time.
That's a really good song, too.
It's beautiful. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Lil Yachty, I think, gets a lot of credit, but sometimes I feel like doesn't get quite enough credit. Like, he's crazy artist.
Well, I mean, there we go, ending it with Daddy Yankee and Lil Yachty. I don't know, can't get much better than that.
Yeah, literally.
So this was a whole lot of fun. This went in some all sorts of places, which is awesome. This is great. I need to do it with like having two people. This is a new experience, and it's fun. So thank you all for being up for it.
Thank you for having us. I also must say I love this tapestry behind you.
This is like a family heirloom.
It
belonged to my grandparents, and it survived a tornado.
Wow.
And they got it. Somebody gifted it to them in the 60s.
It's very cool. Very vibrant.
Yeah. Like the Lion King. I don't know. thank you. Okay. The album's out. EP, mini album, whatever we call it, November 22nd, which I don't know when this will be out, so the album may be out. And you said a show coming up on the 25th. Do you have tour plans or anything?
So we're playing New York on November 25th, Los Angeles on December 9th, and then we will be touring in 2025. So stay tuned for those details.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you all.
Thank you.
Once again, thank you to Adam and Mary Lou, aka Leia, for just going for it and just totally embracing this and getting on a video call for an hour and having fun and being silly and getting emotional about Billie Eilish songs. I mean, hey, what are you gonna do? I Forget Everything is out now. It's so good. You need to check that out. But if you are not familiar with Leia's work, do yourself a favor this holiday season. Go listen to all their albums and have yourself a good cry. Okay. Link to their playlist in the show notes, which is kind of a extra. There's a lot more songs on it than usual because there's two of them and things kind of went a little wonky in there. And hey, it's all good. It's my show. I can do whatever I want. Thank you all for listening. If you enjoy the show, please leave a rating and review. And if you like it even more than just doing that, like doing that is awesome. Please do that. You can join the Patreon, patreon.com/voxdigitalis. You hear the whole conversation, unabridged, unedited, and you get the episodes a week early and some other stuff. This one, you can actually hear like the real story behind their band name, which I didn't know. And it's pretty freaking interesting and hilarious and wonderful. And so them. All right. That is it. For me, until next time, keep on listening to whatever the hell you want.